Welcome to This Week in Debian, the podcast that brings you the latest news and interviews inside the Debian community. Brought to you by FrostbiteSystems.com, providing desktops and notebooks pre-installed with Debian. Every purchase from Frostbite Systems, a portion of the proceeds will be donated back to Debian and help support this great project. So stop on by FrostbiteSystems.com and get your Frostbox today. Hello, welcome. Thank you for joining us on This Week in Debian. Today we've got a great episode for you. We're speaking with Neil McGovern, the release manager of Debian. Neil, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Jonathan.
Yeah, I appreciate your time and take out of your busy schedule to speak with us.
It's quite okay. It's good to help.
Well, Neil, the first thing I'd like to ask everyone that interview is, how did you first get involved into Linux?
Oh, the first one, I was at university in Sheffield in the UK, and I had a housemate there who was a Debian developer, and it basically went from there. He introduced me to the University Computing Society, and which he ended up chairing, and cut my first teeth there, really.
Do you know what was the first distro you used? Was that Debian?
Unfortunately, I don't think it was. I think it was Mandriva, actually. I think it was when it was first being released, all the way back then.
Oh, okay. Were you going to school for, like, computer science or anything, or...?
Yeah, I was studying computer science at...
So before that, then, you were using Windows, I'm assuming?
Before that, it was... I was using the old Mac systems and...
Oh, okay. It's kind of funny. A lot of the stories recently, that when I ask people how they got involved in Linux, it usually starts off, well, I started going to college and a roommate of mine, or, you know, I just decided to start using it. It's kind of funny, you know, crossing over to college, then a lot of people start getting into Linux and. What did you first like it when you tried it, or did you not like it? Like, what did you like about it or not like about it at the time?
The thing that really struck me is, certainly with Debian, is how easy it was just to get new software and how it was all in one place.
Mm.
And then I found a couple of bugs which I just didn't like, and I was just able to change it, which is one of the beauties of it. You can just fix the things you don't like about it.
Yeah, that is great. So how did you come across Debian?
Again, that was probably through my housemate, who was a Debian developer. And she gave me a Debian CD, and I got that installed, and then never really left.
Well, that's pretty cool. When I was speaking earlier, you said that you live in the UK. What is open source or like Linux like in the area that you're in? Like, what's the presence like over there?
Well, certainly, I'm in Cambridge in the East of England region. And Cambridge has a very big set of Debian developers, and got a very high concentration of IT and biotech industries. So there's certainly a lot of embedded and a lot of Linux presence within the area.
Yeah, actually, we interviewed Ben Hutchinson, who works on the kernel. I think he lives in Cambridge too.
He does indeed. I know Ben quite well.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. How many other Debian developers do you know around the area?
Certainly there. I think there's about 8 or 9 that live in Cambridge itself.
Wow.
Which is, quite good. It was at one point the most densely populated city with Debian developers, but quite a few have moved around now, so I'm not sure that's the case. But it's certainly a popular area.
What's the Ubuntu penetration in the area, since I know Canonical has their office like in London? I'm not sure the difference between London and Cambridge, but is there like a lot of Ubuntu users around the area too?
There's a fair few. I know certainly a lot of the Debian developers in Cambridge went on to work for Canonical.
Oh, really?
We all still get on and still meet each other all the time, so... and go to the pub, so it's still quite good.
That's pretty cool. So Neil, you mentioned that you're the release manager for Debian. What does that job entail on a daily basis, especially now that Squeeze is frozen and where you know Debian's working on pushing out the new release? What do you have to do on a day-to-day basis?
Well, certainly now we've frozen, it involves managing the release process more than anything, and making sure that packages are in a fit state so we can release. When we're frozen, packages don't automatically move from the unstable into the testing distribution, which we use to base for the next release. And a lot of it needs reviewing and making sure that it's not going to introduce any regressions or any bugs or any affect the release in any way. So that we get a lot of requests coming in each day to review packages and make sure they're okay. So it's a bit of that, and also writing text and updates for the rest of the project, and trying to make sure that the release critical bugs, the number of those go down, so that we can get the release out.
So for people that might not know the whole process, that they hear words being thrown around all the time, when Debian says that it's in a frozen state, can you explain to our listeners what exactly that means?
Absolutely. What happens is, normally, Debian developers and maintainers will upload their packages to the unstable distribution. And during a normal everyday period in Debian, then after a certain amount of time, normally about 10 days, and assuming it's been built on all our different architectures and there's no release critical bugs and a couple of other metrics, then it moves from the unstable distribution into testing. And then eventually that testing distribution becomes our next release and becomes a stable release. And what happens when we freeze is shortly in Debian terms, before we release, we freeze the automatic transition of things from unstable into testing. And we just have to manually review everything so we can stabilize it, and there aren't going to be any big changes happening.
So no one can put in any new features. Basically, the focus is squashing every bug possible. That's
it. Yep. Yeah. So no new upstream versions or no new features. It's just it really is about getting stability and making sure that it's as stable as we can get it.
Now who oversees, like, you know, who decides, okay, we're at a good enough point to where we can finally call this stable and release it? Like, is there a board of, you know, reviewers, or like who has that kind of decision making?
Well, eventually it comes down to myself and the other release manager, which is Adam Barrett. Of course, we talk to the rest of the release team. As you point out, it's not just me and Adam. There's a team of five or six people who help with the release and in the team. And we eventually reach a stage that when we reach certain metrics, so for example, there's no RC bugs left that are going to affect the release, and various other bits and pieces, so we're happy it's built everywhere, and at that point we release.
Okay. Another thing, I'm not sure if I understood this when I talked with Ben, but I found it really interesting, was with unstable, stuff can, like packages here and there, can kind of trickle out of unstable and into testing. I never knew it worked that way. Is that how it works?
Yep. There's a job that runs twice a day. Looks to see what things are compatible and moves sets of packages in. So it moves everything that's been built against each other and all the dependencies, and it moves those into the testing distribution. So throughout the year that goes on. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. I always assumed that you know, testing was kind of its own pool of stuff, and you guys worked on that, and then, you know, once you move testing in the stable, then you, like, took a snapshot of unstable and moved that into the testing branch, but that's not the case.
No, it's, which is an interesting way. I think Debian's fairly unique in the way it does that. It has this distribution, which is, which kind of shields users from the bleeding edge of the unstable, and sort of filters it, so makes sure that the worst bugs and problems are caught, and then it automatically moves down into testing.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like I said, when I was talking to Ben, he was talking about that, and I didn't know that's like how it worked. I think that's pretty cool. You mentioned the different like architectures really quick when you were mentioning the pack, like squashing the bugs in the packages, and Debian supports like every architecture on the sun. I've heard people say you can install Debian on a toaster. So
absolutely, yeah.
So like if I was a maintainer of package X, would I would I have to support all the architectures that Debian supports, or like how does that work?
You don't have to. I mean, by default, all the packages will just be built on every architecture we've got available, and there is a considerable number. I think we're looking to do 12 different types of architectures coming up with Squeeze.
Wow.
And that's made up of a couple of different bits and pieces. So that we've also got, for the first time, two FreeBSD-based kernels coming out, so we're going to be supporting a Linux-based one and and as a sort of technology preview, a K3BSD-based distribution as well, so people can install that. I mean, we keep reviewing all the architectures all the time to make sure that they're still up to date and you can still buy them, which is an important part. But yeah, so we it certainly is the case that we try and keep Debian as the universal operating system and installable on anything.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, it must be worth Debian's time to do that if you're supporting 12 different architectures. I mean, do you know how the downloads are for all of those across the board? Like I said, it must be at least worth your time.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the thing we've got. We've got various criteria on how architectures are supported, and it does have to have a certain number of users. It's fairly low. I think it's something like 50 or 100 known users of the port. But they're often used in other situations, like a lot of ARM and a lot of MIPS and PowerPC type things that are used in lots of embedded environments as well. So there is the mDebian project, which is about taking Debian and helping it become a lot more streamlined for embedded uses. So it's certainly important to support all these architectures if we can.
Has anyone, because I know Debian has an ARM port, has anyone tried like installing Debian on like a cell phone or anything? Do you know of anyone trying that?
Yeah, there's a couple. There was a while ago the Motorola E780. I got one of those and I managed to install Debian with X on that. And that there's other interesting ones like the, well, now bought by HP, but the Palm Pre.
Really?
Yeah, actually, I believe runs a Debian-based system as well as the Nokia N900. I mean, that I think, believe it, even uses apt-get in the background, so there's quite a heavy use of Linux and things within the embedded worlds, yeah.
So you could take an N900 and get just like straight, you know, Debian installed on that and run like a pure Debian operating system?
I think you can. I'm not sure how well it'll work as a phone, because it probably needs some non-free stuff to get the phone working.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know that there's lots of Linux type things out there that you can just install Debian on.
That's really cool. You said you messed around with that Motorola phone. I'm assuming you didn't have any phone functionality with that either. You just were, was it like a, kind of almost like a tablet device you used it as?
Yeah, basically. I was you could SSH in and then play stuff through the internal speaker microphone, but I could never get, I didn't really have enough time to get the phone bit working.
Do you know if you can get Debian on like the N800 and the N810? Can you get?
I'm not sure on the N800 and N810. I did get it installed on the N700, which I had a while back, so I'd imagine it wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah. Do you know of any of, like, you know, what's the craziest thing you've heard Debian installed on? Has anyone told you, oh, yeah, I got it running on, you know, this or that? Have you heard any crazy stories?
I mean, a lot of The excitement at the moment, which came out of DebConf, was about the a freedom box. So the idea is this is a Guru or Shiva plug. These are small $25-$30 little boxes that it's about the size of I know a quart of milk or something like that, that just plugs into the wall and it has Wi-Fi. And the idea is that that connects to your gateway and your wireless router, and it will do things like proxy things around the world and make sure it backs things up and sort of really protect your freedoms that way. So there's a lot of talk about how that can be done.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So back to the releasing of Debian. How long have you been the release manager or on the release team?
Well, I've been on the release team for three and a half releases now, and I just became the release manager along with Adam at last DevConf, so that was the start of August.
Oh, cool.
Fairly recent.
Yeah. What normally when Debian's frozen, I mean, I know Debian says we'll release when we're ready, but normally, do you know, like, is there kind of a rough amount of time? Like, once you freeze, do you usually have a rough idea of when you might be releasing? Is there any kind of projected release time for Squeeze?
There isn't really. We're still fairly early on in the release cycle. It's just a case of getting the number of release critical bugs fixed and getting them down, and getting that level down to zero. And then once it reaches that, we can release.
The one thing I noticed when I interviewed Ben Hutchinson was I realized, like, you know, Debian to me seems they're not worried about building the latest social networking client or like some new whiz bang feature in like the GNOME desktop or adding something in the KDE. Like Debian's, it seems like their sole purpose is to take, you know, the upstream stuff and build the most stable possible Linux distribution possible. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, certainly out of a lot of the Debian, a lot of the Linux releases out there, Debian is one of the most stable ones, partly to do with the release process we've got. It does take a long time, but that's because we make sure that there aren't any bugs that are going to cause big problems. Certainly we do like to get the latest stuff in if we can, but it has to be stable. People use it, for example, I know that the German federal government use it almost exclusively, so you don't really want planes crashing at Frankfurt Airport if there's a bug in a web browser, so we try and just make sure that it actually works. And a lot of our users expect that it's stable and it doesn't crash. So that's one of the most important things we strive for.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, everyone that I've spoken with so far in Debian, they're just always talking about squashing bugs, and getting it down to, you know, getting all the critical ones out of there and even squashing everything else they possibly can. It just must be very meticulous work and time-consuming to just work on all those bugs.
Yeah, it can be fun too. I mean, part of the release process we have when we're frozen is we have release critical bug squashing parties. So there'll be a load of developers from around the world will go somewhere, and there's hopefully normally there's one coming up in Cambridge, there's some in Zurich, so some various places all over the world where people go for the weekend and just work on squashing bugs. And it's a bit of a social thing too, because you get to meet people who you haven't seen in a while, and then you get to work on it all together.
Well, speaking of squashing bugs, actually, if someone wanted to get involved with that, say if they weren't a programmer, could they still get involved and help out in some way?
Yeah, sure. Certainly one of the things that's very useful at the moment is we've got, if they're good at writing documentation, for example, we have the release notes and the upgrade testing and various bits and pieces, which we obviously always love help with. So that's a very good way of trying to help out the release team. And they can certainly do that. I think that's being coordinated on the Debian doc mailing list. So if you go to list.debian.org and go to the Debian doc a mailing list, then there's loads of information on there about how to get involved and help with the documentation.
Cool. What about like reporting bugs or like double checking and making sure there isn't like dual bugs, you know, reported in separate places and stuff like that? Do you need help doing things like that too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the more help we get, the better.
So where would they go if they wanted to just get involved in like bug squashing in general? Is there a website they go to for that?
Yeah, I mean, the best place to go is if you go to release.debian.org, then there's normally links off there.
Okay.
The best one is if you have a look, if basically at the bottom of there's something called useful links, and there's one which is called another list of RC bugs. That's quite a useful tool because it has lots of information in it. You can filter the RC, particularly just the RC bugs, and you can filter those by categories and their status, and so you can just pick something from there and start working on it.
Mm. With like the bug squashing parties, I mean, with Ubuntu building off of you guys, do they participate in any way to squash the bugs in Debian? Because obviously that helps them. If there's no bugs, you know, the less bugs there is in Debian, the less problems they're going to have. So do they get involved, I'd imagine, with that too?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people who work on both distributions, so there is a bit of crossover there. I know, for example, there is a lot of cross-working between Debian and Ubuntu in the security teams. Keyes Cook, particularly over on the Ubuntu side, is always very active and I know works with our security team and trying to get the fixes in time. So any security bug is automatically release critical bug. So there is a bit of collaboration that goes on.
I heard a stat the other day that Ubuntu uses basically like 70% of Debian, and then the other 30%, they basically tweak and change or do whatever they want. When Ubuntu, like say that 30%, if they're using, I don't know, like Firefox, just for an example. Say if they're using Firefox that comes from Debian, but they want to change a little bit or tweak it however they want. What happens if like Debian doesn't necessarily agree with what they're doing and they don't want to support it? Is it basically Ubuntu's job to support it from there on out? And if there's any sort of, you know, problems, they have to fix it, and it's not Debian's problem if they drastically change it, you know, from the upstream?
Yeah, I mean, the Firefox is a particularly interesting one because Debian ships Iceweasel rather than Firefox,
yeah,
which is a rebranded one.
It's probably a bad example, but it's the only thing I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I mean, I know that Mark Shuttleworth and the Canonical people are very supportive of Debian and how we do things. He has the phrase that every Debian developer is an Ubuntu developer. And they do tweaks to basically change packages and things to meet their goals.
Mm.
And how they'd like to do that. There is certainly quite a bit of collaboration that does go on. Again, they are a separate distribution, so obviously want to do their own things. I know we don't really support each other's distributions, but they're certainly useful when things come back and we can help each other out.
Yeah, how is working with you know such a big distribution like that? You know, they're building off of, you know, all the work Debian does. Is there you know, does Ubuntu want to push changes upstream that, like, you know, either Debian doesn't agree with, or even GNOME or whatever? Like, is there anything like that goes on, or?
Not particularly. Normally within sort of the open source world, everyone kind of talks to each other quite a bit anyway. There is a lot of back channel contacts that go on, and so normally if there's something new and cool happening, then it will get pushed upstream, and if upstream like it as well, because there's another set of people there who have to agree with the method and the way things want to go, and if they agree with it, then it will eventually filter back down.
Do you know if Debian's going to adopt the whole gestures thing that Ubuntu's working on?
I have no idea. If some Debian developers think it's cool enough, or if they think it's something that they particularly want to see in Debian, then they'll certainly try and post a mailing list after we've released, obviously, and try and get support for that. There's no particular reason why not.
Yeah.
It basically just requires someone to come along and do the work. Debian has always been a bit of a duocracy, as it's been called. So
that's pretty good.
Basically, those who do the work get the say.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I know that's what I love about Linux. I mean, as long as you're motivated and you want to do the work, it can get done. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you go through the proper channels, and you know, just kind of run it by someone. Hey, I want to do this, and you know, I mean, you don't necessarily have to get the okay, but it's good to kind of communicate with people, let them know I'd like to do this, and pretty much the majority of the time at the other end of that is go ahead, do it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've got the time and you want to put the effort in, then it's normally really appreciated. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. With the release schedules, is there anything else involved? Other than squashing bugs, is there any other stuff that you have to oversee and you know just keep an eye on when you're when you're in the freeze stage? Is there, you know, do people try and sneak in features without someone noticing, or is it a pretty tight ship?
It's not too bad. Occasionally we get accidentally upload new stuff or bits and pieces. One of the ways we prefer to do things is everything goes through this unstable to testing layer, because then it gets the most amount of testing.
Okay.
Unfortunately, if a library changes in a way that's not compatible, then we can't just get that simple fix up through unstable. So we need to watch out and try and make sure that everything's being uploaded isn't going to block everything and make sure it's all okay. So it is quite a lot about stabilization this period and getting the bug squashed. And
with unstable, there's not really a way to actually install it. Like, you have to basically change your sources.list and kind of do an upgrade. Is that pretty much what everyone does, or do people? I know there's the distribution Sidux, which builds off of unstable. Like, what do Debian developers and/or testers do to run, you know, the unstable branch to do testing on it?
Well, there's a couple of different ones we get. I know you can get a testing distribution, and go in through that. I'm not entirely. I think it's debian.org/cd, where you can normally get it.
Oh, okay.
So you can get various bits and pieces from there, and I know you can install testing distributions and then try and move up to unstable like that. And they're created weekly.
Oh, okay.
So there's a weekly testing image, and then you can move up that way. We generally don't recommend, in Debian we generally don't recommend people run unstable directly unless they're doing active development, because it can contain some of the worst bugs. It's been, in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, it's been a lot more stable than it has been in the past, but if you do run unstable, then there's always a risk that something big and bad could happen.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that some, you know, a new Linux user or a newish Linux user might see, you know, testing next to Debian. They might be like, oh, that, you know, that's probably, you know, not safe to use. But they don't know what Debian considers testing, everyone else in the world considers stable. So
yeah, absolutely. And I know that Ubuntu, for example, when they take their snapshots, they take it directly from our unstable branch. So it's normally it does get quite a bit of testing before it goes into unstable, but our quality of code in a stable branch is are really quite heavily looked after.
Yeah, so exactly. So Ubuntu takes, you know, like you said, a snapshot of unstable, and then they build a release on that. So
absolutely.
So even unstable is not probably a good label for it, but it's just it's just funny that Debian, that's how, you know, serious you guys are about stability. And just, you know, when you guys label something stable, like when Squeeze is stable, then that's absolutely going to be stable, and there's no qualms about it.
Yep, absolutely.
That's great. Well, Neil, is there anything else you'd like to cover that we didn't go over? Is there any part of the release schedule that you'd like to talk about?
No, I think that's probably about it. That should cover everything.
Neil, I appreciate your time. Appreciate all of your hard work in Debian, and you know, for helping produce such a great distribution. And
no problems. Yeah.
And send out the thanks to everyone else on the release team and all the hard work they do.
I will, Dave. Certainly.
All right, Neil. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you sometime soon.
Okay. Be good to see you.
Have a good day.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Debian. If you know someone, or you yourself, are in the Debian community, please get a hold of us. We can interview you. If you'd like to get a hold of us, our email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Again, that email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.